This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
My man Jason Fitz and Freddie Coleman, appreciate you joining us on Barton Hahn, presented by Progressive Insurance and ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, as well as tune in. Hit us up anytime you want to 888-SAY-ESPN. 888-729-3776. You're going to hear about the word family when it involves Doug Williams, Michael Vick, and other quarterbacks in the NFL that comes your way in about 10 minutes. But a lot of family concerns when it comes to Brittany Griner. Her family is worried, when is she going to be able to return to U.S. soil? In case you missed it earlier today, she was sentenced to 9 years in prison by a Russian court for carrying 0.702 grams of cannabis oil. Not needing to be a math major, but it's less than the weight of a stick of gum. That is the sentence that was handed down to Brittany Griner, and prosecutors said, Jason, it was enough to meet the significant amount threshold under Article 229 of the Criminal Code, when it comes to Russia.
Yeah, I think you have to look at all of this and say, first and foremost, as TJ Quinn made apparent with us earlier, we don't really know if she even had it. But if she did have it and had that small amount of it, then we have to look at all of this and say, okay, now what? How do you sort of move forward in this? Because what we do know is that every indication has been that these were the steps that had to happen to get to the point of negotiation. What we don't know, and I'm not going to pretend either of us is smart enough to figure out, is how that negotiation plays forward, because right. It's so difficult to figure out what it's worth, and you know what precedent you're sending. And I don't mean what it's worth in the sense of, like, common sense says it's always worth whatever it takes to get somebody back. I'm also not the president of the United States. I'm not smart enough to figure out, like, every action has an equal opposite reaction. Like, there is so much collateral damage that happens from everything that gets done. I think we have to understand that this process is very intentional, right? And when you're sure. In the middle of an intentional process, it has to be deliberate, but also we have to make sure that we're doing the best for what Brittany Griner needs.
Because we know that Russia is going to do the best for themselves.
Yeah, 100%.
And if that wasn't apparent before, it is clearly apparent now, especially what we've seen involving that country that has nothing to do with sports in the last 6 months and more than ever before. And this is not just a Brittany Griner thing. I'm speaking to anybody out there that wants to travel abroad. And you made this point, even traveling from state to state, you better know the laws and the rules and regulations of where you're going. If you have anything that can be considered improper, you better make sure it is not part of your person, that is not part of your travel itinerary, because she has become a textbook cautionary tale, because even she said she didn't realize that this was against the law. And now somebody will say, and I'm not going to say they're wrong, Jason, say, you got to know the laws of a place that you've been to. It's not the first time she's been to Russia. She's played over there and has helped teams win championships in women's basketball. You got to know, especially more than ever before, what you're getting yourself into and what those laws and those regulations look like. Now, if she didn't have anything on her and they're making her that kind of poster child for we're going to be Mother Russia and all that stuff, then you know what? Shame on them. There's no doubt about that. But even something that may be minute to us and is minute to us does not mean it's minute in a place that takes these kind of things when it comes to people traveling in their country very, very seriously.
Yeah, and I think you make a great point when it comes to international travel. But even when it comes to domestic travel, I said this earlier, but
you brought it up
when bands travel to Canada, they get hotel rooms to store anything that they know they can't take to Canada. But even for me, like, I happen to live luckily in a state where there are certain things that are legal. So, like, having marijuana is legal in Connecticut up to a certain amount on your person, right? Doesn't mean that's legal everywhere. So certainly if I'm a consumer, if, like, I like edibles, I've never hidden this, right? So, like, but if I'm traveling someplace where that's not legal, then it's up to me to make sure that I take every step. Now, we don't know whether Brittany had anything on her. We won't know for a very long time. We know that she pled guilty. We know that she did exactly what she's being told to do in this process. We know that everybody in the process did what they were told to do. And we know that everybody expected it to play out exactly this way. If this is a simple mistake, man, that's the sort of thing that everybody's got to be more careful. And I hope every player involved in this process, every player that is involved in international competition, steps back and is like, man, I've got to make sure that I am incredibly careful with everything I do. But I also think that the scary part of this is just in general, for me, you, for anybody listening, if you are ever going to travel abroad. Like, I want to go to Italy next year. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have to, like, worry about whether or not I'm going to be able to come home, whether I did anything right or wrong or not. And sure. I think that's a very real concern if you look around now and you're like, my God, I don't want to be stuck in Russia because our government and their government are arguing about important issues and suddenly find myself a pawn in an international negotiation.
Great stuff by Jason Fitz. Joining me, Freddie Coleman and Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio. In a WNBA-NBA statement, they called this unjust and unfortunate. President Biden called this unacceptable. But what now? Now that this sentence has been handed down, 9 years for Brittany Griner. ESPN investigative reporter TJ Gwynn joined us about 45 minutes ago, and he says this is what could happen next after the verdict was handed down today.
It's hardly great news for Brittany Griner. It was, from all accounts, she's absolutely devastated. But what it does is it lets the case move from the legal world to the diplomatic world. Russia has said all along, don't talk to us about it while a trial is going on, even though it is clearly an illegitimate process. They treat it like it's real, and they want the U.S. to treat it like it's real. Now, Brittany Griner, she did that in her defense. She took it seriously, begged for the court's mercy. It didn't work. But for all purposes, whether the sentence was a year or 10 years, the length of her detention is going to be determined by however long it takes to cut a deal between those two countries.
The last thing you want to be a part of is a yardstick measuring contest between two countries. Seriously, well, my yardstick is bigger than yours. No, my yardstick is bigger than yours. That's the last thing that you want to be in the middle of. And unfortunately for Brittany Griner, we can't forget about the other man involved in this. That's what this has come down to, that these two countries, the United States and Russia, are going to do whatever they feel is possible to make sure one does not believe they got over on the other. And right now, Brittany Griner is in the middle of all that.
And this raises an interesting and difficult question to answer, because there are more than a dozen WNBA players that play in Russia and Ukraine as of last year. And looking at a couple of different articles, they'll point out that part of the reason they play in those areas is that top players can earn over $1 million over there. So what you have are WNBA players here that are making some money, but then they can go overseas and they can make substantial money, in part because Russian sports leagues are funded either by government municipalities, some are owned by oligarchs that they just want to win championships. They don't care about profitability. Like, they handle things differently. So there's a lot of money to be earned for these athletes while they have their opportunity to earn. I wonder if this, in and of itself, is going to create more sort of, a cautiousness when it comes to even the concept of going over to Russia specifically to play. Even if you're a superstar there, is $1 million worth it if you're taking this risk that you might just be detained for no reason?
You mentioned that because a friend of mine, Katrina McLeod, who played at Notre Dame, and she played in Russia for about 5 years. And by the way, for those who don't know, she could play. I mean, she used to wear us out and play good basketball. The first time I saw her play, I said, all right, who brought the ringer in? And she could do her thing. And when she told me she was going to Russia, I said, that must be a hell of a lot of money for you to go there as a person of color to play in Russia. And she said, Freddie, it is stupid money. I can't turn that down. And she said the WNBA is not paying that kind of – they don't have that kind of stroke. And this was back in the early 2000s. And here we are in 2022, Jason. We're still having that conversation about WNBA players not getting that kind of money. There are going to be more young ladies making more money with NIL deals, like Paige Beckers, who just suffered a torn ACL for UConn, that are going to make more than WNBA players when it comes to the average salary. So that money is very, very hard to ignore, where you're going to go someplace that is cold, but is, from a cultural standpoint, you broaden your mind, because Russia has a long history when it comes to cultural and what they've been able to be a part of. But you add that money on top of that, it is very, very enticing to say yes instead of no because of what's going on from a governmental standpoint, especially over there.
The average WNBA salary for 2021 was $120,648, according to Yahoo Finance. Only 14 players in the WNBA earned more than $200,000 that year. So when you start talking about the number of players that can then go somewhere else and get generational wealth, which is, you know, not to say that what they're making isn't great money. I'm not implying that at all. I think a lot of people listening are saying, sure, wow, that's good money. But you only have a few years to do that. You have a limited window like any other athlete, and you can go make 10 times as much to play in Russia. I think that would be more often than not, that'd be very enticing for a lot of us. No matter what you do, to go earn 10 times as much to spend 6 months in Russia, I think that's a real consideration. I wonder if this changes that consideration.
Well, if it's going to change, the bulk of that money have to come from the NBA, because they're a multi-billion dollar business and they're in lockstep with the WNBA. as great as that league has continued to be, the WNBA, when it's going to get to that level of finances. And when you don't play a lot of games and generate that kind of revenue, that's where it gets sticky and slippery when it comes to that, the WNBA, the NBA, and paying players more so they don't have to worry about going overseas and making that kind of money. That is too rich and too much to ignore. Jason Fitz and Freddie Coleman, thanks for joining us on Barton Hahn and ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Protect the stuff you love with renter's insurance. Do it this way by visiting progressive.com. The NFL is back between now and February, or the way the NFL is going between now and probably August. It's going to be football each and every weekend from now until February. Let's bring in Jason Reed. Does a great job as an NFL senior writer for Antscape and ESPN. He is the author of a brand new great book called Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America, is chronicling the stories that have been integral to show the slow progress that black pioneers made the position, from NFL early great Fritz Powell to Doug Williams, Michael Vick, and the rest of this elite extended family. He joins us now here on Bart and Hahn. Jason, the easy question is, what made you decide to write this book? What is your answer?
Well, first of all, fellas, thanks for having me. Sure. Back in 2019, the NFL was commemorating its 100th season, and it just seemed to me that there had never been more superstar black passers leading teams. And so I went to my editors at ESPN and I said to them, hey, I'd like to follow this thing, this happening, this occurrence where there are all these black quarterbacks. After historically in league history, you know, black men were not allowed to play quarterback. And this emergence had only really been over the last, you know, few decades top. So as it turned out, Lamar Jackson won the MVP award. Patrick Mahomes led the Chiefs to the Super Bowl, and he won the Super Bowl MVP. Kyler Murray was the Offensive Rookie of the Year. Dak Prescott had a great year with the Cowboys. Russell Wilson continued to thrive. So it actually wound up, you know, being the year of the black quarterback in the NFL as the NFL commemorated its 100th season. And then I was approached about writing a book, kind of expanding it. But I didn't want to just focus on one season. I really wanted to try to, like, trace this thing. Like, how did this group that was once the most marginalized in the NFL come to occupy this position of power and prominence? And like about 70, 75 interviews and 88,000 words later, we have our Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America.
Jason, with that being said, you know, so much conversation about how front offices still to this day view certain black quarterbacks. In your research, did you find, or do you believe that ceiling has finally been broken through?
Oh, yeah, listen, there has never been a better time to be a black man at quarterback in the NFL. I mean, black quarterbacks have the largest guarantees. Among the top 10 salaries, there are five black quarterbacks. Black quarterbacks have massive endorsement opportunities off the field. They occupy positions of prominence as the face of their teams. So clearly, we are now in the era of the black quarterback, is the way I like to phrase it. And we're also at a point where this is only going to keep coming, because if we look at the traditional football powerhouses, the Alabamas, the Ohio States, the USCs, they're all led by black quarterbacks. You know, I started my career covering high school sports, as a lot of sports writers do. And I remember when I was covering recruiting, you know, I'd go to these quarterback camps, these elite quarterback, you know, so supposed all-star camps, where they get all the top passers in and they work on their skills with college coaches. And, well, actually, pro coaches, college coaches aren't allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it would be rare to see a black face. Now you see black players at all these camps. So there's a pipeline coming, and we're really at a point where in another 5 to 10 years, it would not be shocking to see 12, 16 teams led by superstar black passers.
ESPN Antscape senior NFL writer Jason Reed authored a new book, Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America, joining us on Barton Hahn and ESPN Radio with Jason Fitz and Freddie Coleman. Jason, what do you say to those who say, why are you making a big deal about this? Why should it matter?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. Whenever you write about race, there are some people who are tired of it. They're like, why do we have to keep talking about race? Well, race tells us where the country has been and where it is and where it's going. And, you know, quite frankly, when you look at the NFL in many ways, you know, mirrors society overall. And the reason, you know, I decided to delve into this is because I've always been interested in history. And, you know, it was only really the 1999 NFL draft, when three black quarterbacks were drafted in the first round, Donovan McNabb, Dante Culpepper, and Akili Smith, that where there was really an acknowledgement by the league that, okay, we are now at a point where we have to acknowledge these guys can play. And the reason I'm writing about it is to explain to people who don't know how we got here, but to also explain that this is how things work in America, that we got to a point where green trumped black. And by that, I mean, when the NFL really exploded and became the 800-pound gorilla and overtook baseball as a national pastime and became the most successful, most profitable, most powerful sports league in the world, when the pressure to win became palpable and team owners were going to fire general managers and head coaches unless they won, you could not afford to ignore anymore if you wanted to keep your job, and you were in one of those jobs, these black quarterbacks who could help the league thrive. So I think when you say, you know, well, why are we writing about this, or why am I writing about it? I'm writing about it because I've always enjoyed history, and I've always enjoyed explaining how things have occurred. And this is the story of how a group that was the most marginalized in the NFL for decades and decades and generations has become one of the most powerful.
How much of that what you just said has really affected how young black kids are no longer watching baseball like they used to?
Oh, I think there's a lot to that, my man. You know, representation matters. And when someone sees someone, especially you're talking about kids, like, you know, I think back to when I was a kid and I watched Doug Williams, you know, in 1987 against the Denver Broncos, first black quarterback to start in the Super Bowl. And I remember watching that game with my brothers and I remember older, you know, men in my family. When Doug Williams lit up the Denver Broncos, it was, and I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to go too much hyperbole here, but it was almost a religious experience for black America. I remember people on my block came outside and we were all talking about it and everyone was joyful because for decades, what black people are told is that you are inferior in the NFL and inferior in the nation, that you are incapable of occupying the most important jobs that everything revolves around. And Doug Williams, you know, in that myth-busting performance showed that black people know, you know, could achieve, could occupy the most important position and thrive it. And I think, you know, when I talk about what it means for America, it's that type of thing, that representation and breaking barriers that lead to other barriers falling, to eventually marginalized people, you know, writ large have an opportunity to contribute to the fabric of this country because they've earned it by showing, hey, if the playing field is somewhat level, I can compete and I can show you.
Jason, as you say that, it really makes me think about some of the conversations Sarah and I have on Spain and Fitz, especially with prominent female athletes, about the fight that constantly is ongoing. You can't just be a woman that's an athlete in America. You have to be a woman that's an athlete and an advocate for the future of women's sports constantly. As you went into the process of writing this book, how much advocacy was required by the former players to get to the point that we are now?
You know, and I when I listen to your show, I know you guys talk about that, and it's a parallel discussion. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the black pioneers at quarterback, they knew that, you know, what they had to do was through their performance show that, okay, we can do this, and then later on other people could stand on their shoulders. And the advocacy was not talking about it because the country wasn't in a place where they really wanted to hear black men talking about overcoming obstacles. But what they did was through their performance, they showed it, and they continually showed it, and to the point where it just became undeniable that, hey, look, we're here, we can contribute, and most importantly, we can help you make money. And I think the discussion about the female athlete in this country, it's so important, okay, because, you know, when you talk about this country, really what we were, for such a long time, we're talking about white males and white male landowners, if we go all the way back in history. And so really almost every other group to a degree is marginalized. And with female athletes right now, you know, like I know you guys were having the Brittany Griner discussion, like the Brittany Griner situation is an economic situation, mm-hmm. first and foremost, because she wouldn't have to have been over there if in this country she could have the economic earning opportunity of male professional athletes. So these whole discussions, all these things are related. You know, it's really all about the changing face of America and how marginalized groups can prove what they can do, and that opportunity meets with accomplishment and change occurs.
If you get a chance, pick up the book. It'll be very eye-opening, and also it'll maybe change your mind about a lot of things. It is Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America, the man that wrote that. He's an FOS friend of the show. He's Jason Reed, ESPN Antscape senior NFL writer, joining Freddie Cohen and Jason Fitz on Bart and Hyde. Great stuff, Jason. Continued success, my friend. We'll talk to you soon, and thanks again.
Thanks, my friend.
Okay, thank you, fellas. Appreciate you.
I'll never forget the first time I saw a black quarterback play in college, and it was Condridge Holloway of Tennessee. Mm. And I remember looking at the TV. I may have been about 6, 7 years of age, Jason. And I looked at my dad and said, wow. I said, one of us is out there. And my dad looked at me and said, yeah, because – and they weren't playing for Grambling or Morgan State HBCUs. And the fact that somebody looked beyond and said, that's the quarterback I want being a quarterback of my team. I said, man, maybe there's something to that, because you weren't used to seeing it, especially with a major college team in the South when it comes to the University of Tennessee.
There are two things that I remember about the Super Bowl that Jason just mentioned. One was that the Wonder Years was on right after that. I remember sitting in the house.
Yeah.
I remember watching that Super Bowl distinctly. But I also remember sitting there with my dad, and my dad, always progressive in his mindset, looking at me as that game went on, and he said, history will remember this forever for one reason. And he was right, you know, and that is absolutely that it takes those performances. And the wildest part about it, to what Jason just echoed and to what Sarah and I talk about all the time, is that when you are great, but you are setting a new precedent, and when you are the new trendsetter, you constantly can't just be great.
Yeah.
You have to be great while you're also carrying the weight of the world and everybody else that wants to follow in your footsteps on your shoulders. As a middle-aged white dude, I will never understand that pressure, but I constantly look at it and say the people that thrive in that pressure only amaze me even more.
And it's not trying to be critical of anybody else. That doesn't mean that you're – and that's when we hold that the whole critical race theory that people get involved in. And I keep telling people all the time, it's not about trying to make people be embarrassed by what happened for something they had nothing to do with. It's about explaining the whole process. That is part of our country's history, that these things went on, that blacks weren't allowed to play quarterback because they didn't believe they're smart for the position. Women athletes couldn't get a chance to do something. That's not trying to make people being ashamed of who you are by what somebody else did. It's about, hey, this went on. It's about opening up your eyes from that standpoint.
It's understanding significance. So like, right. I always use Black Panther's a great movie. I didn't love it. It didn't hit me. It didn't resonate with me.
Okay.
But I remember talking to L. Duncan one time about it, and we're all friends with L. And I was like, man, I just don't understand what the hype was for it. Like, I thought it was good, but I didn't think it was amazing. And she said, representation. So like, I can look at my kids now and say, look at that. You can be a superhero. For me, that was eye-opening because I don't think about those things because it wasn't a part of my childhood, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and for me, sometimes it's just about understanding why things are significant to other people so that you can relate to it.
Yeah, same thing when Eminem first broke on the scene in hip-hop.
Yeah.
There were plenty of white kids say, hey, there's somebody like me in a field that was dominated by blacks. And 100%. I said, I understand it from that standpoint, why that means more to you with Eminem, because it was somebody that was a face that you weren't used to seeing from that standpoint. That doesn't mean you'd be ashamed of black hip-hoppers. It's just, hey, he's good. He can spit some rhymes. He just didn't look like what everybody was used to seeing. And it was the same thing with black quarterbacks and also everything else. Keep weighing in. We'd love to hear what you have to say at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Jason Fitz and Freddie Coleman. And for Barton Hahn and ESPN Radio. And wait until you hear who compared Zach Wilson of the Jets to Patrick Mahomes of the Chiefs in a good way. That's next.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bart and Hahn.
So who had the audacity to say that Zach Wilson could be the next Patrick Mahomes? Yikes. With Jason Fitz and Freddie Coleman on Bart and Hahn, presented by Progressive Insurance and ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, as well as TuneIn. Who is that person? The man used to be known as Chad Johnson, then Tad Ochocinco, and now being back to Chad Johnson. He said in an interview with Sports Illustrated last week, and I'm going to read it word for word, Zach is extremely good. He has the it factor. Very Patrick Mahomes-ish. I'm not saying he's Patrick Mahomes, but you watch his mechanics, his throwing motion, the way he moves, he's very Patrick Mahomes-ish. So I became a fan. Zach Wilson is going to flourish. He's going to flourish in New York. It's all about Jets head coach Robert Saleh getting the right pieces around him. He and Elijah Moore this year, they're going to create magic, end quote.
Freddie, we're friends.
Yes, we are.
I know that you're a Jets fan.
Yes, I am.
And I want joy for you. I want the joy down in your heart. I do.
Happy, joy. Happy, Jet.
I also now want to party with Chad Johnson, apparently, because whatever he's got, I want some of. Like the drastic leap we are taking here. And I have one major concern about Zach Wilson, essentially. And it all, like, let me boil back to his college career. He had a huge spike in production. And I asked him in an interview on one of the shows I was working on.
Yeah.
Why? What changed that made the production go through the roof? And his answer to me in a moment of honesty that I appreciated was, man, I don't know.
It just happened,
right? That's weird to me. And the spike in production happened in a year where suddenly BYU was scheduling people days in advance because of COVID,
right,
which I really respect. But that also changes the way everybody game plans for everybody. Mm-hmm. So, like, we're taking this really solid year that he had at BYU that was the weirdest year ever that even he can't explain, and now we're trying to make it success in New York. Like, I just think that that's a huge leap. Like, the whole reason that I'm cautious on Trey Lance is I don't like huge leaps. I think it can work sometimes, sure. But if you were a college football head, if you were a college football fanatic, you saw Patrick Mahomes coming to a certain degree, right? Maybe not everybody, but right. I think a lot of our guys that cover college football are like, yep, I'm not totally surprised by what we've seen. I've yet to talk to anybody that watched Zach Wilson at the college level and say, yep, that's a guy. He's going to lead to Super Bowls. Like, I want success for you. I want success for Jets fans. I think the Jets are going to be picking in the top five of the NFL draft and find out they don't have their quarterback by the end of this year.
Here's the deal with that. And I've always been a big believer, and I keep being proven time and time again. When you think somebody's going to be great, either they're going to be really not that, or they're better than you could have ever imagined. We knew LeBron James was going to be great. We didn't see this great from LeBron James. Same thing with Michael Jordan. You can even go back in the past NFL quarterbacks. People thought Dan Marino was going to be good. Nobody saw that coming.
Right.
People saw Patrick Mahomes, that he's going to be fantastic. Nobody saw this. So it's different levels. It is very dangerous when you try to put somebody who there's still more questions about than answers with a guy that is the biggest, baddest boy right now in the NFL jungle when it comes to Patrick Mahomes. And my concern with Zach Wilson.
He's Derek Carr, man. Yeah. Go ahead.
Hold on a second. 2:35 Eastern time, 11:35 Pacific. It took 2 hours and 35 minutes before Jason Fitz finally said, well, wait a minute. What about my guy Derek Carr compared to Patrick Mahomes? I thought for sure in the first hour of the show that would show up. So I'll give you credit.
MVC.
Yeah.
MVC.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, I get it.
Go ahead.
But Derek Carr, I thought he was going to be good.
You hope he's going to be.
Yeah, but the jury is not out on him to me. But for some reason, the jury is out on people regarding Derek Carr. Even a couple of years ago, I don't think he's that good. I said, dude, that guy's getting sandwiched by defensive linemen all the time. You give him have a chance to throw the football, watch what he'll do. And we saw it last year when he got the team to the playoffs. We even saw it a couple of years ago before he got injured in the game against Kansas City, and the Raiders couldn't do anything in the playoffs because they had a compromised quarterback. I have less questions about Derek Carr back then than I have about Zach Wilson right now. Because here's what I worry about Zach Wilson. If we're having the same conversation about him in December that we had last December. Because I know he can throw the ball 80 yards down the field. I've seen that. If you want to have that kind of contest where you want to win the stuffed animal, the carnival, those kind of throws, have at it. I want to see you can do on 3rd and 6. Stop bouncing the ball in front of your wide receivers like you're playing point guard in the NBA. If we're having the same conversation about Zach Wilson, then Chad Johnson's going to look foolish. But the Jets are going to look worse because they decided this is the guy that is going to lead them out of the abyss again when it comes to that organization.
Here's the biggest concern, Freddie, I have. And I won't ask everybody. There won't be a pop quiz. Just follow me here. Week 1, Ravens. Vegas will favor the Ravens. Week 2, the Browns. We'll see what the quarterback situation is.
I don't think it matters.
Week 3, the Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
Week 4, the Steelers.
Could be a pick 'em, but I'm favoring the Steelers.
Week 5, the Dolphins.
Okay. Dolphins have a better team.
Week 6, the Packers, then the Broncos, then the Patriots, then the Bills, then the Patriots again. I think the Jets have a realistic chance, even if they're a better football team, of starting 0-10.
I don't think they'll start 0-10. I could see 3-7.
I mean,
because of the NFL.
Well,
it's a
sure.
Week by
yeah,
week
and
league.
That's fair.
It's a second by second league.
Let me, well, we'll say it this way then. I wouldn't be surprised to see Vegas have them be the underdog in the first 10 weeks of the season.
Oh, I could definitely see
and
that.
And if they're the underdog in the first 10 weeks of the season, that means they'd have to outperform what most of us think to get a couple of wins. Before they get to the Bears, like then they have the Bears, the Vikings. But if you look at their schedule this year,
it's front-loaded.
It is horrific.
Zach Wilson can't be that word horrific. I've seen that way too many times with him being horrific. And I get it. He's a rookie, had to deal with that, fine. But if we're having the same conversation about Zach Wilson this December like we had last December, then I can't – we think the Dolphins have buyer's remorse for Tua Tagovailoa? It'll be nothing compared to the New York Jets having buyer's remorse with that football team. Speaking of football, Jason Mr. Raider Fitz will share why you better believe in his team in 2022, and I'll do everything to stop him. That's next on ESPN Radio's Bart and Hahn.
Bart and Hahn.
Jason Fitz, I'm Freddie Coleman. Thanks for joining us on Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, 6XM Channel 80, and tune in. Presented by Progressive Insurance. Football is back, and if you're a New York Giants fan, you're hoping, what does it exactly mean for your quarterback when it comes to Daniel Jones? But Brian Daboll, Giants head coach, he is excited, and he likes what he sees not only from his quarterback, but from another guy under pressure, too.
Yeah, he looks explosive. You know, he hit one yesterday and got out into the open field, and I don't know what his GPS numbers, but it was high. He was moving pretty good. He's explosive. He's quick. He's strong. He looks good to me.
Talking about running back Saquon Barkley says he's ready to go. Now, that's all well and good. Everybody looks great in shorts and T-shirts and a helmet on, but man, oh, man, both of these dudes under pressure with a brand-new head coach. I want to see how this plays out in New York, the Giants involving Jones and Barkley.
Have you ever gone to a psychic, Freddie?
No, I have not.
Okay, me either. I have this rule with a psychic.
Okay.
If I ever decide to go see a psychic, somebody hit me up. What I'm going to do first is I'm going to take the most dumpster fire friend I've ever had in my life, the guy that has nothing going for him, and or girl, and I'm going to take him and I'm going to send him into the psychic first. And if they walk out of the psychic in tears saying, I've been told my life is a disaster, I'm never going to amount to anything, I'm never going to hold a job, and I'm going to die alone, I will see that psychic for the rest of my life because that person is obviously actually seeing the future.
Right.
The next time I hear a new head coach come out and say, really thought we had more at the quarterback position. Running back looks a little slow. I'm not like, what are we supposed to believe right
Thank
now?
Because
my answer to this is nothing. Like Brian Daboll is not going to come out and be like, well, news, guys. I took a look at this. I'd like everybody to know Josh Allen is better than Daniel Jones. It took a minute with Josh, but this is going to take an hour. I don't know what we're doing. And Saquon, I don't know why we paid the guy, but we'll just get through this year. Like, there's nothing else he can't say. And I hope he's right because I would love to see what we do know is that Brian Daboll has proven to be part of an organization that was patient in developing talent. More important than anything this year, does he see the talent he believes he can develop for the next 2 or 3 years from Daniel Jones? Great. If he does, spectacular. But everything he says right now to me is just a psychic telling me what I want to hear.
It's true, but Brian Daboll does a great job playing the media because the media wants to know, what do you think about Saquon Barkley? He's thinking, well, I know how I feel, but I'll tell you what you want to hear. He's done that with Daniel Jones. He's let it be known that there's talent there. It's up to us to get it out of him, which is what coaching is supposed to be.
Fair.
Brian Daboll's done a great job understanding the New York media to say, okay, I know what you guys are going to ask. I know what you guys want to hear, but I ain't giving it to you. I'm going to let you know what I want to tell you.
Still love the idea. We tried to trade him, just couldn't get anything more than a bag of peanuts.
No one's going to be that honest.
I would. Make me your coach.
I know you would, but then the media would love you.
Oh, yeah.
And the GM and the owners would hate your guts. He's Jason Fitz. I'm Freddie Coleman in for Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, 6XM Channel 80, as well as tune in. This one, you know, you are the biggest, baddest boy in any sports jungle. When a preseason game is going to get more attention than a crucial regular season matchup. The New York Mets and the Atlanta Braves are about to start a 5-game, 4-day series tonight in New York. Mets have a 3.5-game lead over the Atlanta Braves in the NL East. And yet, all eyes on football being back, even though it's a preseason game with the Jaguars and your Raiders. Trevor Lawrence is not going to play quarterback tonight for Jacksonville. We're not going to see Derek Carr play quarterback for the Raiders. Doesn't matter. That is getting more attention than a crucial series in early August involving two teams competing in the NL East.
A crucial series with two teams that are not only big playing well, they're big brands.
Yes,
they're
they are.
Big baseball markets.
Good point.
They're in talkable markets. And what I mean by that is, like, obviously Mets, Braves, you're talking about, like, it's harder to have a conversation, no offense to great producer Stosh. We're talking a lot less about the Royals, right? Like,
yes.
If it's Royals, A's right now, the whole nation's probably not talking about it. Mets, Braves should be worth the conversation.
Should be.
But to your point, and this is every year I love this, ever since I've started covering sports for a living. The amount of times that people that cover it sit there and just poo-poo all over the NFL preseason. Oh, it's trash. Trey used to always say the same things. Like, everybody hates preseason. No, they don't. Because I can tell you, like, as a lifelong diehard Raiders fan, I can't wait to watch tonight. And I know I'm watching nothing that matters to the end of this season. I know what happens is all of us with our favorite team, we want to watch that game. Now, do we want to watch two teams we don't care about? No. Like, if you have no vested interest in, you know, the Jags taking on the Colts in a preseason game, not that bad, but still, you get my point. Mm-hmm. You're not going to watch it. But if you're a fan of those teams, like, if tonight, there's a lot of people casually just going to turn it on and be like, hey, preseason football is better than nothing.
And even casual fans are going to take a look tonight.
Yeah.
They are. That's the power of the National Football League. When people want your product and they can't wait to sample your product, even though right now it's a meaningless game, not to the guys out there playing, but for anybody out there watching, people are going to give more than a cursory glance. More people give more of a cursory glance to that than try to find out what's going on between the Mets and the Braves outside of those cities. And that's where baseball is. That's where the NFL is. That's where football is.
Which is wild for me to think about, because
why
the importance of these matchups this late in the season should mean something.
Absolutely. And I'm a Mets fan. I'm with you on this one.
And like, I'm not a baseball guy at all, and I am a football guy. So I'm the first to admit my grown-up bias, because I think sometimes the way we were raised plays into this conversation, right? My dad never really liked baseball. My family was never super into it. But if you're Major League Baseball, this is the time that catches everybody. It has to catch everybody.
It should.
And if it's not, then you got to look around and say, what do we do? And I don't know the answer. I know everybody likes to have fixing baseball conversations. But when we look at the problems with baseball and also the problems with the NFL, when you know that no matter what happens with your league, you're going to make $4.4 billion in ad revenue, there'll never be accountability. Like, for all the yelling and screaming about the NFL, everybody's going to tune in tonight, you know? And maybe it won't be a big conversation tomorrow, but a Pro Football Hall of Fame game is going to distract everybody for a few hours. And for a few hours, it's going to be all about this. And even if the Deshaun Watson thing goes all the way into September, October, November, once there are real games being played, that's what people are going to care about.
At least Jacksonville doesn't have to worry about the distraction known as Urban Meyer no longer part of this organization. Tony Boselli, who played for this organization and getting inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame this weekend in Canton, Ohio, he says, this affected this football team so much that you have to think about this when it comes to Trevor Lawrence from last year to this year.
It was so bad and so dysfunctional last year. It's almost unfair to look at the numbers on the field. I actually look at the whole picture of Trevor Lawrence and what he was able to do from a leadership standpoint and hold that thing together and not crack under the pressure with a head coach who did not know what he was doing and was not doing the right thing off the field. So, you know, maybe that's a little bit of a cop-out, but I do think he's going to be a superstar. And I think Doug Peterson will get him there. You know, I don't think this is a team that's going to do what the Bengals did, go from last to the Super Bowl. But I do think they will be playing meaningful football in December and probably get close to that 500 or just over 500 mark and set the stage for a team that has good talent, a really good coach, and I think a generational quarterback.
Both of these quarterbacks that won't play tonight, Trevor Lawrence of Jacksonville and Derek Carr of the Raiders, did the exact same thing last year. When their organizations were falling apart, they were the guys that stood and faced the music. Trevor Lawrence had to deal with the stench of a bad coach and a bad guy when it came to Urban Meyer. Never shied away from the media. Never dimed out his coach or anybody else. When the Raiders would look like they were falling apart of the whole John Gruden mess, Derek Carr stood in front of microphones each and every day saying, we're going to be fine, we're going to be okay, and got that team to a playoff. If those two can survive that, if you're fans of both of these teams, you're thinking the future's going to be a lot brighter, because if they can deal with that and succeed on a different level, then everything's going to be fine after that.
There's a difference between good and phenomenal at the quarterback position. The freshman year for Trevor Lawrence was so phenomenal that there were people calling for him to challenge the NFL in court so he could go right away. I was standing on the sideline at the end of his freshman year for the national championship game as people were screaming, he's the next Elway. He needs to get in the league right now. I said it when he was drafted. I believed that the Jaguars would fail him before he would fail the Jaguars.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I will credit the Jaguars for, as much as the Urban Meyer coach hire was obviously awful, Sometimes you look at it and you admit that mistake and you move on quickly.
Right. Don't keep mistakes in the building.
I think this is going to be the first time that we can actually see what Trevor Lawrence is capable of. And while I don't think in a stacked AFC they can be super competitive, I still believe that he has a chance to be one of the best young quarterbacks in the NFL, and that will start this year.
And Doug Peterson, we've seen if he can win a Super Bowl with Nick Foles, this is the most talented guy he's ever had.
Oh, a chance
to coach. And a guy that's vested in the game to make the organization better, only good's going to come out of that. Even though we won't see it tonight, football's back between now and February.
You don't say football's back tonight? The Raiders are playing! The Raiders are playing! I mean, come on.
I'm sorry. I know you got a bet on the game, don't you?
No, I'm not a degenerate. I don't have a bet on a preseason game, just on the regular season.
Oh, okay. So you're a different kind of degenerate.
Yeah, a different kind of degenerate for sure. I say that now, but I still haven't made up my mind. There's plenty of time left. Car for MVP!
Which means there'll be a wager on this game.
MVC!
Canteen Carlin comes up next with Amber Wilson and Nick Friedel on the Brittany Griner Verdict and more. This has been Barton Hahn on the Mighty ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Barton Hahn Podcast. You can listen live to Barton Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio or stream the video of the show on ESPN Plus. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.